Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another great edition here of Suspense Radio. I am your I'm your host, John Robb, along with my co-host here, Matt McElreath, and I'm telling you, we have another great show tonight. We are going to have Sheila Lowe and Donald Allen Kirch on live.
Hey, everyone, this is Matt. As always, we will be talking about some books that we think you should pick up and give them a quick review, go over some of the fine points of them, and we will also have our popular segment, Suspense Smackdown, and today we will debate hero versus villain from the reader's point of view. So get ready for 60 minutes of Suspense Radio, and it starts right now.
But tonight, you belong to me, yeah.
All right, good evening, everybody. This is John on the line here, and I'll tell you, we've had a great weekend. Everything's been going good. The radio show has been really picking up a lot of steam along with the magazine. And I'm going to go ahead here with our book review section, and I'm going to go first because I got another trifecta. I got three great books that I want to talk about. The first one is called The Insider by Rhys Hirsch. And this book got really fabulous reviews from the likes of Stephen Barry to Gail Lentz to Sophie Littlefield. So this is a book that definitely is a runner that you want to go ahead and, you know, if you thrill ride, roller coaster, you want to pick this up and definitely make sure that, you know, you go ahead and read this book with the lights on. The other one I want to talk about is by John Walker. And it's called Wrath and Remembrance. Now, this is book one of his Dark Retribution Quartet, so we can assume that there's probably going to be four of these. And he hits it off here with a bang right now with Wrath and Remembrance. So this is one to look out for. Again, it's John Walker, and it is called Wrath and Remembrance. So you definitely want to check that out. The third one here that I have is from Julie Kramer. And Julie has written a novel called Silencing Sam. And this has got very favorable reviews from the likes of Vince Flynn and Tammy Hoag, People Magazine, calling it a crowd pleaser. So she's got very great reviews here on Silencing Sam. So you definitely want to check out Julie Kramer. Those are my three that I have for tonight. So, Matt, what do you got?
Well, first, I just want to remind everyone, if you want to call in and speak with us, if you've got anything you want to talk about, or if you want to talk to our authors later, you can call the toll-free number at 877-666-9320, 877-666-9320.
Yeah, and, I kind of got ahead of myself a little bit. I was just so excited about these books. I kind of got a little ahead of myself, so thanks for that one.
Hey, no problem. Just wanted to recap just real quick also our last show in case you missed it. You can always listen to old shows at Blog Talk Radio. They're podcasted. We had John Gilstrap and Gail Lips. I'm sorry, that's today.
You're right, yeah, Friday. Yeah, Friday night we had.
And,
right.
And, you can always check out any of our old shows there. I'm going to talk about a couple books. One is.
But you know what? I'm happy because you got John's name right, at least when you reset it. So that was good because it's kind of funny.
Throw me under the bus.
I know. Here we go.
First book I want to talk about is called Caught by Harlan Coben. It's his latest. And basically, if anyone has seen the To Catch a Predator series on NBC, this is kind of follows a similar, where there's a similar show in the book, but the thing that comes up is, did they catch the right guy? And what happens if they did catch the wrong guy? How do they catch the right guy? And it's a definite mystery thriller that's going to take you all over the place. It comes highly recommended from everyone who's read it. It's a great book. So definitely look into Harlan Coben's Caught is what it's called. And then the second one is a Nelson DeMille book. It's called The Lion. It's actually a sequel to a book called The Lion's Gate. And it's one of those stories with the terrorist plot. The villain basically is a terrorist who's out for revenge. His family was all killed by the Reagan bombings that he back when they went after Gaddafi. And so you've got a truly evil villain in this book, and you've got one of those heroes that you just fall in love with and you root for all the time. So that's going to lead us into our SmackDown
And I actually read that book going out to Thriller Fest, and it was a very quick read, so it was a fabulous book. I agree on that one.
So, yeah, those are my picks to click that definitely everyone should get. And like you said, they'll be quick reads because there's just so much action. Everything's going on in there. So.
And so the SmackDown tonight, like Matt said, it's going to kind of lead into that because, we are going to talk about the perspective kind of from the reader. And it's good to kind of get some author information on this. Is what is a little bit more intriguing here? Is it going to be, the dashing hero? Or is it going to be the psychotic villain that kind of keeps the interest with readers in the book? And I don't know, it's going to be a great, because, we have two great and kind of a little bit different spectrum that we're going to have on tonight with Sheila Lowe, who is a forensic handwriting expert. She might have been good. We talked about that on the last SmackDown with the CSI Law and Order. And then Donald Alan Kirch, who's big into the paranormal. And speaking of the paranormal, what we have coming up here in October is going to be our horror month. And so we're asking all the listeners, the writers, because we want to hear about your local horror story. Everybody's kind of got, whether it's a horror story or a ghost story, some kind of little Blair Witch that they have in their own little town, one of those things. So we want to know what you guys have on location, and we want you guys to send those in to us so we can maybe, include those in the magazine for October. Also, our August issue is out. It's our first printed edition that's going to be out in stores, and we have John Conley in this. We have Brenda Novak in this, so we got some heavyweights. We have a lot of great information that we always include every month, and it just keeps getting bigger and better. There's nothing more I can say. It's just that the authors and the stories and everything that we got coming up, everything in the magazine is just for the insiders here, and we write this for the fans because it's the fans and the readers that really make our magazine and really make everything. And those contributions just makes everything so much better. So.
Go ahead. We also, asking people for stories of haunted homes or local legends, things of that nature.
Anything.
That's the things we definitely want to include in our issues because we have written about things like the Queen Mary here in Long Beach. I say here because we're in Southern California, but it's supposedly haunted, and those are great stories to relate. And of course, we are gonna when we talk with Donald a little bit later, he's got some interesting stories of his own since he has that paranormal interest. So we're definitely going to follow up with him and get his view on that as well.
Right. But right now what we want to do is we want to bring on the Rose series. She has four books out with her latest called Last Rose. So Sheila, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I'm getting over jet lag.
Oh, that's right. I remember you kind of texted us here in the San Jose airport. You were over in RWA. Is that where you were
Florida? No. I was actually last week I went to Detroit to speak at a handwriting convention and also to do a book signing at Aunt Agatha's in Ann Arbor.
How did that go?
It was great. I'd never been there before. It was a wonderful little store, and Lots of people came out. Some people even drove 4 hours to come to the signing.
Wow. So, you know, your book, Last Rites, is about Claudia Rose. Can you give us a little insight, maybe, how kind of, since this is Claudia's fourth book that you've written about her, how has she changed all the way from Poison Pen now up to Last Rites? Uh-oh. Sheila might have got lost off the air here. I have to check. So, well, you know what? Yeah, I think she got bumped off. And that's what happens sometimes. I think she might have been talking on her cell phone, so we're going to have to wait. But I want to give a little background here while we're talking about Sheila. Is her first book was Poison Pen, and then she has Written in Blood and Dead Right and Last Rites. And Claudia Rose is a character that is a forensic handwriting expert. So she kind of writes this a lot firsthand because she knows the character so well, because that's, you know, that's what she does. So it's one of those, when people write what they know and maybe write, you know, where they are, it makes things so much more believable, you know, for the reader, which is a really good thing. And that's exactly what she does, which makes her books, you know, just that much more intriguing because of the believability factor in what she has is, you know, that character. So anybody, you know, any author who's out there, if you don't read or you don't really know, you know, kind of the subject that you're going against, it kind of hurts a little bit on the readership, and, you know, you want to make sure that you have that. So, well, we weren't really expecting, you know, Sheila to jump off the line here, and I have to see if, let's see if we have her back here. Hold on 1 second. So, Sheila, are you back? No, I guess we don't have Sheila back yet. Let's go ahead and see if, you know, see if there's any questions maybe out there in, you know, in the chat room. But it looks like everybody right now is going to be looking at, you know, stuff for Sheila. The other thing is when Matt was talking about his Harlan Coben, they are re-releasing his first book called Play Dead, which is going to be coming out here shortly again. So that's something you want to look for. It's, they've kind of added a, you know, they've added a little letter to it,
hey,
or whatnot.
John,
but hold on, Sheila.
Back now.
Yeah.
Sheila, we got you back up. What happened?
Everything just went dead.
Uh oh. That's what
it
happened.
Dropped me.
That's okay. That's all right. Okay. Yeah. So I was asking, from Poison Pen now to Last Rites, how has Claudia progressed as a character?
I think she's getting stronger. When I first started writing, my first editor told me that she was feeling guilty too much, and she was always worrying about what she was doing and the effects on people, and she seems to have grown through that, and boy, she's a lot braver than I am, I can tell you.
Really?
Is it
kind of fun to write that way, where you can kind of make your character a little bit outside of maybe how you are as a person?
Sure, she can do things that I just wouldn't have the guts to do, like going into a cult like she's doing here. I mean, she's not pretending to be a cult member. She goes there legitimately because she's invited as a handwriting expert. But still, putting herself in that position in this book, the tagline is, what does an old stuffed bunny have to do with a fundamentalist religious cult? And there's actually a three-year-old child who's missing, and so that's why she wants to get into the cult to see if she can find out what happened. And she's only got a few days to find out.
So now when you're writing the series and you're writing your next book, do you try to make the next book, I guess, a little bit more on the suspenseful side where, you know, it's maybe a harder, maybe like adventure to go through, a little more challenging each and every time? Is that what your goal is when you're writing?
I don't know if I necessarily do that, although from the first book to the second book, I definitely wanted to make it a sort of bigger book. And when you say suspense, I'm really glad you said that, because especially with the cover of this book, you know, the
I was going to get into that. I'm glad
you brought it up. And, well, not only that, but the title, my editor at Penguin changed that, too. The original title was Unholy Writ. And she didn't feel that the readers would
get what that meant, and I felt she didn't give my readers enough credit, but we went around and around about it, and we finally changed it to Last Rites. That was the only title I could live with that we talked about. But then I get the usual boilerplate email that says, here's your new cover art. We hope you love it as much as we do. And I said, no, I don't love it at all. This doesn't represent my book. This scene isn't even in the book quite like this. And but they said, as usual, don't worry about it. It'll be fine. Well, my problem with it is this. I believe my books fall under the psychological suspense subgenre.
Absolutely, they do.
Yeah, well, people who look at this cover are going to think it's a cozy. And people who like cozies might read it, and then they're going to get ticked off because it's not a cozy. But people who like psychological suspense seeing this cover are not going to be attracted to it because they'll think it's cozy.
And you know, we always say never judge a book by its cover. But the funny thing is when you look at your four covers, you could definitely say, okay, the fourth one has nothing to do with the first three whatsoever. So I could definitely see how you would be a little upset over something like that. But hopefully, you know, but your fans are there, and, you know, I wouldn't worry too much about it. And I actually, you know, I think Matt has a question from the chat room right now. Why don't you go ahead? Or maybe he doesn't. I thought he had one.
Okay. Well, okay. You know, there was a guy at the signing on Saturday who said to me, these aren't completely cozy, are they? And I said, no, they're not at all. And he said, well, this cover looks cozy. So who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, Matt is back. So he's going to go ahead here, and he does have a question for you. Go ahead, Matt. What do you got?
Well, what I've got, first question is, what made you become interested in analyzing handwriting?
Oh, we have to go way, way, way back in time. When I was in high school over 40 years ago, my boyfriend's mother had read a book on handwriting analysis, and she analyzed my handwriting. And as a kind of a shy teenager, I found that I got interested, and I started reading books on it. And then when I go to parties, I didn't have to make conversation. I could sit on the couch, and everybody would come over and say, what does my handwriting say, or my boyfriend, my girlfriend? And so I got real interested in it and started studying it seriously eventually. So that was how I got started.
I want to remind everybody right now, too, that we are speaking with Sheila Lowe for the second time tonight because the first time she got cut off. But if you want to go ahead and call in and you want to ask her a live question, the number here is 877-666-9320, and that's 877-666-9320. And the chat room's buzzing, though, because I know Matt just said he has another question in there. So, Matt, why don't you go ahead with your next one?
Sure, yes. I mean, it's kind of in regards to handwriting analysis. You had mentioned before at a book signing this person had gone to that you analyze children's handwriting. Can this analysis be helpful with aiding psychologists, for example, in detecting potential serial criminals?
That's interesting because I really don't often do children's writing unless they're I prefer them to be at least 12 and up. And when I do analyze children's writing, I want to have drawings as well, certain kinds of drawings. But yes, it definitely is helpful, and there are psychologists who use it. In fact, I am approved by the state of California to provide continuing education to marriage and family therapists with handwriting analysis. I even have a special website for that. So it definitely is helpful to them.
Yeah, that's fabulous because what I'm, you know, of course, you know, you started out as a handwriting expert and now you're writing. Do you think that you would rather, if you had to pick one, now that you've done four books, which one do you think that you would rather probably do full time if you had to go into one, if you had to pick one or the other?
Well, I would like to be writing mysteries full time at this point. You know, after, like I always say, after 40 years of analyzing handwriting, I was ready to kill someone. So I'm ready to make a change in careers. Handwriting analysis is still my day job for now anyway.
And so speaking then of handwriting analysis, what is you've worked with law enforcement with handwriting analysis. Can you kind of sit there and say what's the strangest kind of thing that you have found when working with law enforcement?
Well, I don't often work directly with law enforcement. I have to admit that. From time to time, I've been asked to analyze handwriting for them, and I suppose the one that comes to mind is the a police department in Australia who contacted me. They had a serial killer there who was in prison, and he was receiving postcards from somebody on the outside, and they wanted to know. They'd had some copycat killing, and so they were trying to decide whether it was this person who had sent the postcard. So they wanted a personality profile of his handwriting.
Wow. Now, so they just mailed that to you, and then you had to realize, you know, whether or not what it was, and you sent back your findings to them, huh?
Yeah, well, they faxed it to me. I didn't see the original, which originals are always best, but, you know, you don't always get that. And when it's evidence, you definitely can't get it, especially from Australia.
That's true. I mean, that sounds, wow.
Yeah,
very
enough evidence. Yeah.
Hey, I've got another question from the chat room here, asking it if when you do your self-promotion and you're out doing book signings and things, do fans ask for you to analyze their writing right there when they're standing in front of you?
Rarely. Once in a while that happens. But, you know, if they've read my books and they know Claudia's attitude about quickie analyses, they probably figure that I feel the same way, which is I don't do quickies.
So that's okay. Well, that's good to
yeah.
know. Now,
so, well, you know, there's just too. It's some people are really good at doing a quick analysis, but it's not one of my best talents. So I'd rather have the time to really look at a writing properly. You know, I don't do this for fun. It's my career, and I take it pretty seriously. Once in a while, I'll make a couple of comments if somebody really really needs to know something, but I prefer not to do them that way.
Right. Now, would you probably say that each book is a standalone, or if someone who is listening and wants to read you for the first time, should they start with Poison Pen and work their way forward, or can they go ahead right now and write and be thrown right into the Claudia Rose saga?
Yeah, the only reason they might want to start with Poison Pen is because that's where Claudia meets her boyfriend, Joel Jovanich. But other than that, they could, you know, they easily stand alone.
And I'm sure that you're working on your fifth book now, and I don't know if it's a Claudia Rose series or not, but can you tell us a little bit about what your next book is going to be and when it might come out?
The book I'm working on now is actually a standalone thriller, but Claudia and her friends have more of a cameo role in this one, and there will be some handwriting analysis, but it's not going to be the same. It's called Lying in Bed, and it starts with a young woman who wakes up on a train, and it's pulling into Ventura Station, and she realizes that she doesn't know where she came from or where she's going or who she is. And that's about all I can tell you about it right now.
Ah, and then there's another, I know that we had a little bit off of knowing what was, people knew you were coming on, and we heard that through Facebook about about Desert Sluice, something that you're involved with. Can you tell us a little more about what that is?
Desert Sluice is going to be the Sisters in Crime Phoenix chapter. And it's a conference that they're holding a week from this Saturday, which is the 14th. And it's an all-day conference. I can't give you the program off the top of my head. I know that I'm speaking early in the morning, like at 8 o'clock, I think, which is just insane for me. Robin Purcell will be there and a whole bunch of other authors. And it's going to be great. It's going to have stuff for readers and for writers. So,
is this something that happens annually that you do, or is this the first year you've done with this?
Yeah, this is the first year I've been there, but I believe they do it annually, and it's going to be at the Wrigley Mansion in Phoenix, so that's supposed to be really terrific.
Oh, so you haven't been out there or anything else to kind of know what's you know, what's going on with that? Or is that a haunted place, or is that just a historical place?
Well, I don't know. I think it's just historical. I haven't heard anything about haunting, but that would be interesting to find out.
Okay. Another question I always like to ask the author, because I know a lot of fans like to always know, when you found out that Poison Pen was bought and was going to be published, how did you celebrate? What'd you do?
Oh gosh, I don't even remember. But you know, I tried for 7 years to get Poison Pen published, and I got a lot of rejections, and I rewrote it many times, and then finally I hired a really good independent editor. And then it was picked up by a small press called Capital Crime Press, and they publish Robert Fate, his Baby Shark series, and Gwen Freeman and Bruce Cook. And it was just starting up then, and so they published it. They got it reviewed by Publishers Weekly, who gave it a starred review. And because of that, Kristen Weber, the editor, she was a senior editor at Penguin, she picked it up and the rest of the series. So I really had two opportunities to celebrate.
Wow.
I can't remember
so,
what I did, but I was just jumping for joy, I can tell you that.
No cake with candles or nothing like that? Or like, I finally did it, yeah.
Well, you know what I did? Actually, when it came out, I had a big book launch party. And so I celebrated with about 50 people, and I've done one every year. And this year, we had about 80 people, and there's pictures on my Facebook page of the party. It was just fantastic.
So you guys,
I find the people. I've got great support here in Ventura.
Right, and you know, and we're just down the street because we're not too far over here in Los Angeles from Ventura. So we might have heard about it, or we might have heard it. You guys might have been really partying it up there that night. You might be like, "What is going on?" So that's good.
Yeah, it was great. Next time
I should come. That is true. And so you said your next book is going to be another, it's a Claudia Rose kind of cameo. So are you going to continue with Claudia more in her series after this fifth book? Do you have any thoughts you might, you know, stop and do somebody else? Because, you know, a lot of authors maybe kind of do a different character per se.
Well, I really like Claudia, and I'd like to continue publishing. If I get a contract for more, I'll be writing more. I have a great new agent. I mean, they're new to me, and we're putting it out there. So if people want to keep reading about Claudia, I'll keep writing.
Fabulous. Well, I want to let everybody know that Sheila Lowe is who we've been talking to, and you want to go ahead right now. And you want to look for Last Rites. Again, you want to also check out Poison Pen, Written in Blood, and Dead Right, all in the Claudia Rose series. And so I got to say, you know, Sheila, we are going to have our Smackdown here, and we hope we want you to hang around, because I don't know if you heard what the Smackdown is going to be, but it's going to be from the readers and hopefully from the point of view of, you know, the hero versus the villain, which makes, you know, the book a lot more intriguing. So we want you to hang around and do that, and we're going to bring you back on right after Donald. So thank you so much for being on. It was great. We appreciate it so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it too.
Thank you. We'll get you right back in about 20 minutes for the Smackdown, so you can start thinking about what do you think is important. Hero
okay,
or villain.
I'll be here.
All right, thanks.
Well, that sounds good. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to transition into our second author tonight, and want to introduce Donald Allen Kirch, and he's a student of the paranormal and an author, and he's also a monthly contributor to Suspense Magazine. So, Donald, thanks for taking the time to talk with us. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Good, Donald. Nice to finally speak with you on the phone. It's great.
It's great to hear from you, John.
So where are you calling us from?
I'm calling you from Kansas City.
Kansas City.
The city of fountains. The city of fountains that not a lot of people in the United States know, but that's the city of fountains.
Yes, it is. I'm originally from Culver City.
There you go. Well, Don, I wanted to start off, since we had mentioned in the opening of the show, we were talking a little bit about paranormal. activities and writing. And so first question in regards to that is, you wrote an article on our current August issue relating to the story behind The Exorcist, or
yes,
more specifically, the unusually high death toll that was going on with that. Can you tell us a little more about that, and maybe a little about the true events that the book was actually based on?
Well, a lot of people don't realize this, but William Peter Blatty, when he wrote The Exorcist, it was actually based on a true exorcism that took place in St. Louis about 1949. And it wasn't with a girl. It was with a 13 or 14-year-old boy. And he knew some of the people that were involved in that case. And it took him, I think, about 10 or 15 years, but he gathered up notes. And ultimately, in his curiosity and studies of the real case, the horror masterpiece, The Exorcist, was born. So a lot of people don't know that, but it was based on a true case. And the article that I wrote was actually... I got that from an inspiration from a book that I read a long time ago. It was called, like, The Exorcist, The Strange Story Behind the Film, and it talked about a lot of weird things that happened while they were making the film. They actually had to have somebody go in and bless the set because everybody was freaking out with all the bad luck that they were having.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, like you said, no, I didn't know that, and just to hear something like that, you'd think nobody would want to continue working on that film if they were on it.
I wouldn't have. It's
no,
like six,
right
page
out
left.
The door. Oh yeah, that's crazy. Well, where did your passion for paranormal and all this come from? When did it start for you?
Well, it started for me. Ironically enough, I was sent to my room once for doing something bad when I was like 9 or 10, and I got hooked on a television series that was called In Search Of. It was hosted by Leonard Nimoy, and it talked about everything from, you know, demon possessions, right down to Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, and all that. And it was all about the paranormal. It was like a variety show for the paranormal. So if it hadn't been for being sent to my room, I probably wouldn't be, you know, stuck on this stuff today. But I watched it. I loved it. I read more books on the subject. I got almost every haunted house book I could think of, read those. You know, read the classics, read The Amityville Horror, read House on Haunted Hill, and, you know, Last House on the Left and all those other books. I just got hooked on it. I just got a sweet tooth for it.
Very interesting. Well, we have a caller on the line, and we have Star. Star, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead with your question.
Thanks, Matt. Hi, Don. It's Star out here in Thousand Oaks. And I've read a couple of your books, which the two that I have read are fantastic, which are Manchester House and Still Waters.
Oh, thank you.
And... Oh, you're welcome. My question is on Still Waters. Now, without giving any information away for those who haven't read the book, how did you come up with the idea of combining the two themes that you did in that book? It's a very different idea.
Actually, it was based on a 1922 British news article that I read once. There was an article that was put in one of the British newspapers about... a cursed mummy case being put into the cargo hold of the Titanic, and it went on from there.
Fabulous. And I tell you what, the buzzing over here, Donald, because I have a question for you that came in from the chat room. When you wrote Quran, once became a woman, how did you get the feelings and emotions so dead on?
I actually talked to a lot of girls that I know, and I set them down and said, I'm going to be asking you questions that are kind of weird, so don't look at me with that Norman Bates look, but da-da-da-da-da, what do you do, and da-da-da-da. I'm trying to keep it clean.
Go ahead,
man. They looked at me for a minute, and I said, okay, I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm doing a story about a guy that's he was cursed, and he was turned into a woman. It wasn't his fault, but he's got to learn to live with it until. And I said, but in the meantime, to make it interesting, the person that did this to them is making him do things that he wouldn't normally do as a guy.
Okay. Isn't that like marriage?
I guess it just could be.
I mean, I'm just kidding. You know, kind of the woman turning him in, then he's doing things he doesn't want to do. I call that marriage.
Yeah,
maybe.
Nowhere is he forced to move.
And I know, that Shane Yerke would agree with me on that one too. So I'm just telling you.
Oh, it was a fun book to write.
Well, a lot of your stuff, like we were talking paranormal, and then you kind of go change of pace with this unique concept for an Arthurian curse is what I'll call it. Do you have a little bit of the fantasy buff in you as well? I mean, is that something you grew up reading and got into as well?
I love Tolkien. I loved C.S. Lewis, Jules Verne, H.G. Wells, almost all the classics.
Did you read any Piers Anthony in your day?
Yes, I read him too. And there was a time there where it was like that was all I was reading.
And me too. The Xanth novels were definitely something I got into a lot. And you know, fantasy, sci-fi, something we don't touch on as much here, and it's definitely something we're going to try and get to more because there's great suspense and thrill action, even though it takes place in these mystical realms. What do you have lined up next for yourself? What are your plans as far as your next books?
Well, I'm currently right in the middle of writing a sequel to Quran. I'm writing a sequel to Manchester's House. Thinking about trying to sell, there's a character in Manchester House. He doesn't show up until about the middle of the book. His name is Ingrid Knight. He's a very interesting character, and I'm trying to sell him as a series.
Well, that's interesting.
How's it going with that?
I'm getting a lot of interesting, hums and all that, but nothing definite. They're nibbling at the bait, but not biting on the hook. Not yet. It's kind of tough out there right now.
I would definitely say that is definitely tough.
Yes.
Another question I had for you, Don, relating kind of back to the paranormal, was tell us about how you spent 2 weekends in the Sally House. I mean, explain to our listeners first, about the Sally House, and then kind of exactly why you were there. I think it was a Fox show or something like that, and then a little insight into that.
It's a small two-story house that's in Atchison, Kansas, and Atchison, Kansas is before becoming famous as the most haunted haunted town in Kansas. It was the hometown of Amelia Earhart, and it was also where the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railroad started. So it used to be a big hub for the railroad industry. But what the Sally House is that it's a post-Civil War house. It was built in the 1890s. And as the story goes, there was a gentleman that lived there who was a doctor. And he had, servants that lived with him. It's an African-American servant. He had an affair with the lady. They had a child together. And being in the times that they were in, he kept the child secret. And he had a problem with drinking, and one day, unfortunately, Sally had a problem with her appendix. He operated on the house, and unfortunately she died there. And the story goes that either he had her secretly buried in the basement of the house, or it was covered up by some other means that time had lost. But what it is that Sally only attacks men who are in the house. You can have a horde of women go through. She's never once attacked a female. What she does is that she scratches them up something fierce. She, puts... You'll feel a pain, and all of a sudden you'll look on your arm and you'll have, nail claws or nail marks on your arms, and blood will start coming out for no apparent reason. But had a chance back in 2004, a group of filmmakers, we were going to get together and we were going to make up some documentaries and put them on the Internet and, try to start up a business. That didn't go through, but we went there. By a brilliant stroke of luck, we ran into the owner of the house. He allowed us to stay there. He was in between clients because it's a rental property. I don't know who would want to rent a haunted house, but that's neither here nor there. But he allowed us to go into the house, and the minute we got there, we got some brand new digital cameras. They were like state-of-the-art cameras that were like used on like movies like 28 Days Later and stuff like that.
Yep.
Minute we got there, the batteries just drained like there was no tomorrow. We couldn't get the cameras to work, so finally we got this hokey little camera out of this one guy's back, like in a Pinto. It was very embarrassing. It worked. And we went through and we were cataloging everything, and two of our cameramen got instantly sick. One of them decided he was never going to come back, and he wasn't even a believer. He was a skeptic from the word go. Went down into the basement, and when we went down into the basement, it was like this basement is a riverbed basement, and all of a sudden there was these bricks flying at us from nowhere. And I went upstairs. I had enough with the bricks. Went upstairs, and as I was going down the stairs, I was taking notes because I was going to be the person that was going to write up the script for all this when it was over. And as I was going down the stairs, I felt these rather adult hands grab me by the shoulder and some rather childlike hands grab me by the ankles. And all at once, the hands on the ankles pulled and the hands on the shoulders pushed. And if it hadn't been for my instinct to just grab a hold of the side of the stairwell, I would have toppled down the stairs and could possibly have broke my neck because it was one of those old Victorian staircases that go on forever.
Wow.
I'll tell you, when you were talking about the Sally House and the woman who only attacks men, that's marriage then, okay? If the other thing was, that's marriage. Scratching you up, taking you, worrying about the woman, but just nailing the men, I would have to say that was definitely the marriage thing.
John, I hope your wife is listening. Really?
Oh, no.
You know what? If she is, she is. What am I going to do?
Hey, Don, you mentioned Civil War, like, in relation to this house, and I know that you're a history buff as well. Is there a particular time period that you are drawn to? Like, for me, I'm a World War II nut. Is there a special time for you that you're drawn to?
I like World War II, Civil War, and I also like the American Revolution because that kind of, you know, started a whole new philosophy to the world that was rather unique and new. It was probably one of the best ideas we ever had, that people, you know, as long as they stay within the realm of the law, can govern themselves. They don't need a king or a monarch to do it for them.
Very interesting, yeah.
And Matt, you were right, because my wife just came in and says, Don, you have a guest room for me.
But I think I just got scratched.
Oh, my Lord, I'm telling you. Okay, hey, I do have a question here from the chat room for you, though, because they want to find out, how long does it take for you to research your books?
Well, with Manchester House, it wasn't really that difficult. Because, like I said, I've been reading paranormal stuff ever since I was, you know, knee-high to a grasshopper. So it's like I already knew some of the catchphrases that parapsychologists use and stuff like that. And for Still Waters, it took me about a year and a half, because one of the characters in the book, one of the main characters in the book, was Thomas Andrews, who was the naval architect who designed and built the Titanic. So I had to learn a lot about the Titanic disaster, the coulda, wouldas, and shouldas, what he could have done, what should have been done, and what wasn't done. So that took me, you know, a great deal of time. I even joined the Titanic Historical Society so I can get some inside dope on the matter.
So you kind of, you know, you kind of go do a lot of your own research, and you go out there and you feel those things, especially, I guess, when you were in the house and you felt, you know, that ghost and, you know, that feeling over top of you. That had to have just been amazingly, you know, astronomical. I've never felt anything like that before. I don't know how you'd even get over something like that.
Well, before I started doing the Sally House investigation, I was what they called an open-minded skeptic. I believed in the possibility of, but I also believed in the possibility of hoaxes. After that, I'm a bona fide believer, but I still look for hoaxes, because you never know, someone might be playing a mind trick on you.
Absolutely.
Hey, everyone, I want to remind everyone, if you want to call in and talk to Don, the phone number that you can call in is 877-666-9320. We are on with Donald Allen Kirch. You can also read or learn more about him at his website, which is Donald Allen, A-L-L-E-N, and Kirch is KIRCH.com. I got an interesting question for you here. Since we're talking paranormal, and if you could talk to anybody who's ever been alive and could sit down for an hour and have a conversation with, who would it be?
Probably Benjamin Franklin.
Why?
Okay, you got to explain why on that.
Because he's the only one from that time period who was smart enough to not be president. And I'd like to find out why. he's an interesting character. One of these days, I'm going to do a book on him. I just don't know what kind of book I'm going to do on him, but I'm going to do a book on Benjamin Franklin. He was a very interesting character. He, you know, invented the bifocals. He invented the stove. So he was interesting.
I'm sure that if you go around the city of Philadelphia and you go over his life, I'm sure that there's a lot of ghost or presence of maybe where he's at, and that could maybe be where you would start, is to maybe find out, you know, maybe where he is, and things like that.
That's interesting, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But there was an encounter he had once when he was in France with Charles Mesmer, who was probably one of the forefathers of what we call hypnotism today. And he had an encounter with him with an investigative team, which also included the gentleman who invented the guillotine, where they proved that he was a fraud. And I've always thought that that little encounter right there would be a precursor for a story.
So, yeah, I mean, that, you could definitely go and start with something like that on Benjamin Franklin because you have, you know, the insight and you're a great researcher. So I do have another question here from the chat room.
Sure.
Is, where did you get the phrase, "It was so quiet you could hear a fish burp"?
Oh, that's in my family.
Hey, we got them coming from all directions, Donald. You just never know what's coming next.
That was in my fantasy novel. I just have a weird sense of humor, and sometimes I just like taking metaphors and just messing them up. Because everybody's heard it so quiet you can hear a pin drop. Nobody's ever heard it so quiet you can hear a fish burp.
That's true.
I don't even know if fish burps. I don't even know if they burp.
I don't know. Maybe that's what all the bubbles are from.
You never know. Let's hope so.
Yeah, I would have to say. So, well, I'll tell you what. We're going to go ahead and, Donald, it has been a great having you on here and talking about, you know, your latest book, Manchester House, talking about Quran and everything that you're doing. We love the articles that you write for Suspense Magazine, and we're so happy to have you a part of the magazine. Well, everybody needs to go visit his website. That's Donald Allen, AllenKirch.com. You have to go check out Manchester House. You have to go check out Quran and everything else that Donald's written, because it's just fabulous research. And it's just wonderful writing. And so it's just another one of those authors that needs to be a little bit more in people's names and households is Donald Allen Kirch. So that's just great. So, Donald, we're going to go ahead here, and we are going to start the SmackDown. And, again, it is going to be the hero versus the villain. Let's see what happens.
I'm already giving you instructions in the dressing room. I expect a tough, clean fight. Protect yourself at all times. Requested from the challenger. Champion, again
on! All right, here we go. So from the reader's or maybe even the author's point of view, is it going to be the dashing hero that comes in and saves the day? Or is it going to be the psychotic villain who likes to wreak havoc through the book? Which character is more intriguing? And Sheila, I'm going to start with you. Which one would you say?
Well, I think that the villains are usually more intriguing. But, you know, in my books, the villains are not usually psychotic. They're ordinary people who get into extraordinary situations.
Okay. Donald?
That's the thing, is the personality of the characters, I think, is a huge factor in this debate.
Actually, I think it's the villain, too, because no matter how dashing the hero is, he has to have motivation, and it's the villain that gives that to him.
Okay. Matt?
I think a lot of times the hero is the constant through all these books. The villain is the one that creates the difference in the story and creates a different action plan for the hero. So I'm going with the villain, too.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to go with the hero, and I'm going to go with the hero just because I think he is the constant, which means he's the one that you see grow like you see Claudia Rose grow in Sheila's books. You see her from the beginning, and then now you see her in book 4. So she's the one that keeps bringing people back to reading because you want to know more about Claudia and about what she's doing and about how Sheila is creating this world around her. So that's why I think the hero is probably the more intriguing character that brings people back to read the books and read about what the author's, you know, about what the author has.
I like that point of view.
Yeah. Okay, so now who's changing their mind and coming
here
with me? Okay, that's what the SmackDown's about, okay? It's about, you know, changing opinions. But it's true. The villain is also, I mean, yeah, if you have a Batman, you have to have a Joker and a Penguin and a Riddler. That's true. And you have to have, you know, that antagonistic person that comes in to do something to the hero. But the hero also goes through a lot of the times an emotional and romantic roller coaster in books, not necessarily what the villain is doing, but it could be something else. So I think that you see the hero as the growing person, and it's more of the constant that keeps going up the hill, where the villain is more of the, for lack of a better term, the EKG machine, which goes up and down, up and down, up and down.
At the same time, John, the villain can strive the hero to greater perfection and to accomplish something that he would have normally have never have done if he hadn't crossed paths with that villain.
Well, don't you think that also what's really important is that they're well matched?
Exactly. You can't have a Sherlock Holmes without a Professor Moriarty.
Right.
So you think that? So let's ask the two of you. Do you enjoy writing or the development more of your hero, or do you like creating more of your villain for each of your books, Donald? Which one would you do first?
Actually, I enjoy both, because I enjoy both propelling the hero in the situations that, like I said, for lack of a better term, he would never have thought about going into. And I also like it when the hero disappoints the villain and causes the villain to, backstep and go, okay, wait a minute, maybe I should have used Brand X instead of Acme, kind of stuff.
And Sheila, same too.
Yeah, I like also both, because the way I approach it is I like exploring the psychology of each of the characters, the hero and the villain. I want to know what it is that motivates that person, because like I said, they're not usually psychotic, but there's some reason why they're doing what they're doing. And of course, Claudia's view is their handwriting and what the motivations show there. But it's also about what motivates her to get into the situation she does. So it's really the psychology for me, and it's important for both of them.
Right. So me as a reader and not an author, I can definitely see both, and I think that they do need to match well. And I think that there's a lot of, positives to both. I don't think that you could probably have a good story, with either one of them. And I think it's kind of split a little in the chat room. I kind of see a little bit of hero and villain and things like that, and, they like to joke around. Man comment, and I don't know why they have to do that. That's kind of mean. But anyway, I still think that you do need to have the constant between the two to make the book good. And I think that the villain is probably the number one supporting character in the book to the hero. And so yeah, I would definitely say that
with the hero, a lot of people read who they project themselves to want to be, the spy, tough guy, or the intellectual detective. So different people relate to the characters differently too. So
let's not forget.
Yeah, you have to be able to identify with somebody in the book. You have to have. Even for the villain, you've got to have some kind of sympathy for them. You look at people often say, look at Hitler. He loved dogs, so there was some kind of humanity in him, even though he was a monster.
Well, so did the Son of Sam.
Yeah. Right.
True. And that's true. So they have to have that realistic, believable side to them too, to where, people can relate. I don't know, maybe their everyday, maybe not their everyday life or emotionally thinking of what they do, but true, they might have a similarity of, certain things. So I'll tell you what, I think what we're going to have to do is we might have to call this SmackDown a tie. I knew it was going to be a difficult topic coming in, and I think we had a great debate on it, and I think it's probably a tie. I think we're just not going to be able to pick which one. But the good thing is that we have two great authors in Donald Allen Kirch and Sheila Lowe that write both a hero and a villain superbly. So I want to thank both of them for coming on the show tonight, because it's been wonderful. I want you to check out, you can check out SheilaLowe.com or check out ClaudiaRose.com to find out more about her book.
It's ClaudiaRoseSeries.com. ClaudiaRose.com is somebody else.
That's right, ClaudiaRoseSeries.com. In fact, I even have it up and I forgot the series. So it's ClaudiaRoseSeries.com. You can check out everything that she's doing, and I urge you to check, you know, at least one of the four books out. Last Rites is her latest one to come out. And then Donald Allen Kirch, you can check him out at DonaldAllenKirch.com and pick up Manchester House and Quran. So, guys, thank you so much for coming on. It was great.
Thank you. It was really great.
Enjoy.
All right. Well, Matt, we're closing here. Is it me or does 60 minutes seem to just be, you know, flying by a lot faster than it used to? Because this is now our fourth show, and, you know, I have.
Yeah, it's definitely, the hour goes fast. There's a lot we could talk about. I think the SmackDowns could go on longer, but, you know, we have to cut it off at some point. But
you can always tell. I kind of cut it off when I think I'm losing. I'm like, okay, we're done.
Yeah. And calling it a tie when I'm not so sure it was a tie, but I wasn't going to argue with you. But
well, I don't know. I mean, because if you can convert someone over, you got to think that that's probably close to a tie. Right?
True.
Am I right?
That's true.
Okay. So, yeah. So, you know, but we have, you know, let's go ahead and remind everybody what we got coming up here on this Friday. We have on August the 6th, again, at 6 p.m. Pacific, we're going to have author Stephen James, who writes the Patrick Bauer series with his latest book, The Bishop, coming out. And we're also going to have J.T. Ellison, who's going to talk about, she has a book out called The Immortals. So both authors are, you know, again, a little bit different on the spectrum, because like Sheila tonight, you know, she was more of the suspense handwriting expert, you know, that side, where Donald was a lot more of the paranormal. So two nice points of view that we got coming on, which is really great. And, you know, so Friday night should be another great show. You know, another great show coming up.
Yeah, and I won't be here, so Starina will be filling in for me.
That's right.
Your co-host, I will be heading out.
It's even going to be, a better show. I'm just pulling your chain.
What?
I'm just pulling your chain. You know, if you can't have a little pulling between friends, I mean, really, what is it? So.
All right.
I
also I wanted to mention, everyone, just to remind, the August issue of Suspense Magazine is out. You can always go to the website suspensemagazine.com to order your subscription, or check out or email us if you want to just read a past issue. We are featuring Jeannie Holmes and Stephen Davison as new authors that you want to check out, as well as some other articles that make for good reading, including some short stories that are fun if you're commuting or something like that, you can get into.
Right. And, you know, we mentioned this Friday, you know, who we have coming on, but you can always go to suspensemagazine.com/suspenseradio.html, or you can click on it right from the home. Have DP Lyle coming on later. Erica Spindler is coming on later this year. So we're going to have some great guests that are going to be coming on here. And you can go ahead, you know, check that out by going to suspensemagazine.com and clicking on Suspense Radio. So I'll tell you, we're going to go ahead and we're going to end the show here tonight. And it's been great, Matt. We'll talk later. And we're going to see you back on the show next Tuesday. So for everybody else, here we go.